The following program is produced by the University of Florida's School of Journalism and Communications under a grant from the National Educational Television and Radio Center in cooperation with the National Association of Educational Broadcasters.
Hopeless people are practically always helpless people. The people in Latin America have begun to hope, and they have begun to do something about the problems that they want to solve, about the things that they haven't liked all of these years. People are undertaking...
If the problems are not solved, if the institutions and their leaders do not become realistic, accept the facts, and modify their attitudes, there will be a national disaster, worse than what we have witnessed to date, I think. In the last years, it has also reflected...
The almost unanimous desire in the hemisphere is to seek more equitable, more humane, and less anachronistic forms of national life. If those efforts are thwarted, Latin America may well become a zone of imminent danger.
The University of Florida presents The Revolution of Rising Expectations, the first in a weekly series of recorded documentary reports on the contemporary revolution in Latin America. Your reporter is the distinguished American journalist and editor of the Christian Science Monitor, Irwin D. Canham.
The singing you hear is of school children in a small village not far from Guatemala City. They are but one segment of the voice of Latin America, and they sing unmindful of grim possibilities. Yet, if the relentless course of present events is not altered, the overwhelming majority of these children in this first grade class will never finish primary school at all, and very few of them will survive beyond his 44th year. But the people of Latin America are determined to change this relentless course of events, determined to seek out a better way of life for themselves and their children. That is what this series is about. It will examine the nature of the contemporary revolution in Latin America. It has often been pointed out that the importance of Latin America to the United States is equaled only by our ignorance of it. A respected Latin American leader takes this view.
And the United States, in its terrible problems in other areas of the world, has overlooked Latin America, not only economically, but in this terrible attitude of not knowing what is going on, of not making any distinction between a democratic movement.
Jose Figueres, former president of Costa Rica, a great champion of democracy in Latin America.
Honest reform, honest and democratic social movement, and who is what? It is very easy to use the alibi that the picture is complicated. It is. It is not easy to learn overnight about the different pattern or the different picture that each Latin American republic presents, but it is not so difficult. And you have in the United States the Latin Americanists, the school professors, who know more about our countries than we do, which proves that it is not a mysterious science.
Great social and economic changes have been sweeping the countries of Central and South America. These changes began as far back as the Mexican Revolution in 1910. Yet awareness of these events by the American public hardly existed before the recent critical doings in Cuba. Taking a lead from Jose Figueres, we talked to a Latin American specialist, the Columbia University sociologist, Clarence Senior. He tells us of the nature of this contemporary revolution.
Latin America is one of the many places in the world in which people are undertaking to bring themselves up to date. Someone some time ago started talking about the revolution of rising expectations. This is what seems to be going on in Asia and Africa and Latin America. People have begun to hope. And when people begin to hope that things that have always existed can be changed, then you have the possibility of what can be called either a revolution or evolution toward better conditions. Hopeless people are practically always helpless people. The people in Latin America have begun to hope, and they have begun to do something about the problems that they want to solve, about the things that they haven't liked all of these years.
An American who has lived in Mexico most of her life believes that attempts to inform the American public of the nature of this revolution of rising hope have failed. Anita Brenner, editor of Mexico This Month, speaks specifically of the Mexican Revolution that was born in violence nearly 51 years ago. Today, this once violent uprising has settled down to a program of peaceful evolution. But to the Mexican, the revolution is still living, still breathing.
The thing that difficult to explain to the American people, the English-speaking American people, is what is this revolution that people are talking about, because they hear the word revolution and they think, Russians. And they don't realize that this is a revolution that went on before the Russian Revolution and has its own roots and its own philosophy and its own methods and is committed to this philosophy of change to keep up with a greater amount of democratization of justice and better spread of the good things of life, but in their own terms.
But what of the rest of Latin America? What conditions have influenced the masses, the peasants, to create this surge of hope? We asked a Colombian sociologist of the National University in Bogota to analyze the sequence of events that have produced tremendous changes in the social and economic structure of his country. Dr. Orlando Falls Border explains that a technical revolution in transportation and communication was a major factor.
One of the first innovations was the airplane, and all communications innovations, which came later. This revolution in communication started to break up the internal isolation of the country, so that this country was more a nation, a united nation, than before. Then came city growth with all its social and economic implications. This growth has been mostly industrial, of course, but in the last years it has also reflected the political insecurity of the rural areas.
The phenomenal growth of Colombian cities and industry since 1930 has resulted in the appearance of a new urban middle class, a group that receives its prestige mainly from financial standing rather than traditional social rank. Meanwhile, life continued in the rural areas much as it had in the past. News of what was happening in the cities, however, began to trickle back over the new improved highways and in the automobiles and on the passenger cars of trains that are being used more and more every day. The peasants soon began to feel the new forces. Dr. Falls Border describes the effect of modern transportation and communication on the peasants.
They began to sense that the world was not, after all, the best of all possible worlds. With more contacts, then these peasants felt a new impulse to modify the situation as it was, and to seek explanations of the things as they were, especially the relationship between the landlord and the agricultural worker. With knowledge of this urban world, then these peasants started to abandon their traditional conservative values. And their standard of living, of course, rose too. They started to make new demands on the traditional institutions, such as the church, the government, the school. This was, I think, the beginning of the crisis which we now face, that the national institutions of major influence somehow found themselves unable and sometimes unwilling to accept the change that was taking place, thus failing to answer to the needs of the people. And consequently, many aspirations of the people have been warped, causing tensions, dissatisfactions, and internal warfare, that means the violencia, as we call it. If the problems are not solved, if the institutions and their leaders do not become realistic, accept the facts, and modify their attitudes, there will be a national disaster, worse than what we have witnessed to date, I think.
Foremost among the many aspirations of the masses in Latin America is the yearning for land reform. Statistics fall short of telling the whole story, but they serve to indicate the immensity of the problem. In Venezuela, 3% of all the landowners own 90% of the land. In Chile, 2% of the landowners own 52% of the available farmland. Fidel Castro used land reform as a rallying point for his revolution in Cuba. Competing with the demagogue in their concern with this issue are responsible leaders all over Latin America. A leader of the Brazilian Labor Party, Oswaldo Lima, tells of the working conditions of the agricultural worker.
And in Latin America, the conditions under which the work in rural areas is done, it's to be considered almost slavery, to be true. We have too much big farms, farms with 10,000 acres, with 5,000 acres, and that is not healthy for the country.
Too many big farms, says Oswaldo Lima. The technical term is latifundia, the system in which landless peasants work this land for little more than their daily sustenance is called the hacienda system. Observers see this system as little less than feudalism, right here in the middle of the 20th century. Many economists view land reform as a necessary first step in the economic development of Latin America. Argentine professor of economics at the University of Mississippi, Pedro Teichert, puts it this way.
It's absolutely necessary that land reform take place in Latin America. The form, but specific form, depends on the country. But if any development is to take place in Latin America, land reform has to take place, which does not mean that land reform as such will solve all the economic problems of the country. But it is a precondition for further development, for further industrialization, because the land system now determines the social structure of these Latin American countries. The class society still exists, feudalism still exists, and industrialization, progress, and education all depends on this outdated agricultural system that has to be gotten rid of one way or another.
Dr. Teichert links this improper and unjust land tenure system to the problem of education. What about education in Latin America? A large group of experts consider it the key problem. Luther Evans, when he was Director General of UNESCO, inaugurated technical assistance in the field of primary education as one of the pilot projects in the United Nations aid to Latin America. Dr. Evans explains his reasons.
Now, over half of the kids of primary school age do not go to school at all in Latin America. And most of those who enter primary school never finish it, so that the average schooling of the total population of Latin America above school age is only 1 year of school. That's the average for Latin America.
The handmaiden of inadequate education is illiteracy. And in Latin America, statistics tell the story of appalling waste of human resources. Only 3 of the 20 countries of Latin America approximate the literacy standards of Western nations. In Brazil in 1950, the number of persons over 10 years old who could neither read nor write was over 50%. Brazilians such as the noted journalist and encyclopedia editor, Antonio Collado, are greatly concerned and hope their new president will do something about it.
But I'm confident that the new government is really going to make education its basic point, because all the other problems derived from education, it's impossible that a country should go on developing as Brazil is now, especially from an industrial point of view, and even a sort of superior cultural point of view, like you can see here in our theater and so on, and having at the same time, at the basis, this colossal amount of amorphous masses of people that can't read or write.
By now we can begin to see the highly interrelated nature of the problems facing most of Latin America. Perhaps no problem is more interrelated than that of economic development. To University of Florida political scientist Harry Cantor, teaching on a leave of absence in Costa Rica, the problem is circular.
It is a sort of vicious circle. Latin America is not economically developed enough to provide a decent standard of living for its people, and it can't provide a decent standard of living for its people because these people are sick, uneducated, with very little energy, and they cannot themselves build up the enterprises which are needed to provide the kind of living that they need.
As in other underdeveloped areas of the world, the communists continue to take advantage of the desires of the Latin American people for a better life. This communist threat to the hemisphere has never been more dramatically illustrated than by recent events in Cuba, which happened, as the saying goes, just 90 miles from home. What appeal does communism have for Latin America? Herbert L. Matthews, Latin American specialist on the editorial board of the New York Times, thinks he has the answer.
There is a communist threat in Latin America now, which is rather more acute than it has ever been, but perhaps for a reason that is not well understood in the United States. The great appeal today of communism, especially Russian and Chinese, of course, is that they point to their own successes in a material way in turning underdeveloped agrarian nations into industrial nations quickly and without outside investments. This has a tremendous appeal in Latin America to the intellectuals, to economists in many ways, to a number of politicians, and above all, it is seeping down to the rural areas where the peasant in general, in Latin America, lives very miserably at a subsistence level.
Since the end of World War II, a deep resentment has existed in Latin America against the policies of the United States. The attitude of the Latin American people on the eve of our 1960 presidential elections is reflected by a student from Peru who was attending the University of Florida at the time.
Well, Latin America basically wants, it needs a new deal. Latin America has heard throughout all these years, as the rest of the world has too, we have heard the advertising made by this country, that here there is freedom, there is personal liberties, that here there is democracy, there is free enterprise. People believe that, and they prefer to use that in order to achieve this political stability, the social justice, the economic progress that they all want and we don't yet have. Well, I think that this period of advertising is over. Now it's the time for action, and Latin America is waiting for it.
During the election campaign, then Senator John Kennedy, had pledged a new Latin American policy. On March 13, 1961, he unveiled his program to the Latin American Diplomatic Corps stationed in Washington.
Therefore, I have called on all people of the hemisphere to join in a new alliance for progress. Alianza Para Progresa, a vast cooperative effort to satisfy the basic needs of the American people for homes, work, and land, health, and schools, techo, trabajo, y tierra, salud y escuela. First, I propose that the American republics begin on a vast new 10-year plan for the Americas, a plan to transform the 1960s, and if we are successful, every American republic will be the master of its own revolution and its own hope and progress.
Is Kennedy's alliance for progress coming in time? And is it enough to stem the tide? Earlier in the year, before the Kennedy pronouncement, Jose Figueres was pessimistic. He told a University of Florida audience,
I believe that unless a great effort comes under the leadership of the United States to develop Latin America rapidly along the democratic lines, unless this comes, we are going to lose the Cold War in Latin America. If someone had told me 10 years ago, 5 years ago, that Latin America could align itself with Russia and China in a Cold War, I would have thought it was preposterous. And yet it is happening.
A former Guatemalan ambassador to the United Nations sees a slightly brighter picture, Jorge Garcia Granados.
Well, I am not entirely pessimistic. I heard Figueres, for instance, who is very much worried about it. I think that if the United States and the Western European countries come to Latin America with a goodwill showing of helping us to develop our natural resources, if we get better prices for our raw materials, and if we could raise the standard of life of our people, the situation could be ameliorated in a certain period, within a certain period, a few years.
A more urgent view from the president of Colombia, Alberto Llaras Camargo, as he talks of the people of Latin America, the masses.
In their state of backwardness is to be found the origin, immediate or remote, of the political instability, the dictatorships, the misuse of freedom, the violence, and other such evils that harass our peoples. Great efforts are being made today in most Latin American countries to eliminate the conflicts, and to do this without political and social disturbances. The almost unanimous desire in the hemisphere is to seek more equitable, more humane, and less anachronistic forms of national life. If those efforts are thwarted, Latin America may well become a zone of imminent danger. That danger holds true for the entire hemisphere.
To conclude our program, we have invited members of the graduate faculty of the University of Florida School of Inter-American Studies to summarize what we have heard so far, and if they will, to try to come to some definite conclusions about the revolution of rising expectations. Here to introduce the panel is the school's director, Dr. A. Curtis Wilgus.
Thank you, Mr. Canham. Everyone who has an interest in Latin America should keep in mind that these countries have changed a great deal in the past century. Indeed, in the last 135 years since independence. Many of the problems of today have been inherited from the past. Historically speaking, some of these problems go back to the 16th century. Over the years, the people of Latin America have been concerned largely in trying to stay alive. But frequently, the national economy has failed them, with unfortunate national and international consequences. Joining me today are Robert W. Bradbury, professor of Latin American economics, and Lowry Nelson, visiting professor of Latin American sociology. Dr. Bradbury, as an economist, what do you think about these economic problems?
Latin America, and again, of course, this is a matter of realizing that there are 20 countries involved here, so that the rates are different, but Latin America as a whole is the fastest growing region of the world. As an economist, I would say that Latin America wants to increase its standard of living. Its standard of living goes up if its production increases more rapidly than its population. It goes down if its production increases less rapidly than the increase in population. With this great increase, this very rapid increase, we're a little bit in the way of Alice in Wonderland. You have to run faster in order to stay at the same place. This then has given rise to the great movements throughout Latin America looking toward increased production. Dr. Nelson, as a sociologist, what do you think is the most important problem in Latin America?
Well, one of the very important ones is part of this heritage from the earlier period. I refer to the dual class system in which there was an elite, a few, and a great mass of the lower class. Often in these countries it is related also to the racial composition. The native population usually is on a lower plane, part of the lower class. The elite is almost always the group that descend directly from Spanish blood or Portuguese, as the case may be. This dual class system in which the one governs and the other works makes it rather difficult, has made it always very difficult to bring about needed reforms. So much responsibility rests upon the elite, who are reluctant to make any concessions until they are forced to do so. So the class system, it seems to me, is one of the big impediments to bringing about social evolution. But now the thing is becoming urgent.
Yes, absolutely. The countries of Latin America are looking at both the United States and Russia as examples of economies that have developed through industrialization. And they're going to follow one or the other. It's a question which one is most attractive as a means of improvement. And so we are facing a conflict of ideology throughout Latin America.
Thank you, gentlemen. For the past half hour, we've been reporting on the Revolution of Rising Expectations, a part of the contemporary revolution in Latin America. The Revolution of Rising Expectations is the first in a series of weekly documentary reports on the contemporary revolution in Latin America. The program was narrated by the distinguished American journalist and editor of the Christian Science Monitor, Erwin D. Canham. The series is produced in cooperation with the University of Florida's School of Inter-American Studies. You may receive without charge the text of today's program by writing this station. This program was prepared and recorded by Will Lewis for Radio Center, School of Journalism and Communications, University of Florida, Gainesville, under a grant from the National Educational Television and Radio Center, and is being distributed by the National Association of Educational Broadcasters. This is the NAEB Radio Network.